The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
For over 30 years, BHM has been the trusted CPA firm for closely held businesses across Ohio and West Virginia.
BHM has made life easier for myself and our company when it comes to tax and accounting.
At BHM, we develop top talent to tackle your most complex challenges.
A CPA firm can be the lifeblood to a successful business. If you don't feel that way about your firm, ask yourself why not.
Visit bhmcpagroup.com to schedule a consultation. BHM, the CPA firm simplifying the complex.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, it's Dan Lane, lead analyst at Robinhood UK. All right, Dan, we haven't spoken for a while.
I know, not too bad. Good to see you again, Justin. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Well, I've just been boring you about my house renovation, which is driving me nuts. But, hopefully this time next week I'll have a proper working kitchen with water and everything, which I haven't had for 8 weeks. So that's like a luxury, just having running water in the kitchen. But, I never thought I'd miss a dishwasher in my life, but I am.
First world problems.
So before we get into this, Robinhood, of course, is very well known in the US, and it's done superbly well. I've been following the stories coming to the UK and stuff. So is it fully launched in the UK now? Tell us a little bit about it, if you could, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of your listeners and viewers will probably know us from the US, but the reality is that Robinhood has a global mission. There's 24 million users in the US, which is huge numbers, and they're loving like the commission-free element of the app, and the fact that there's no minimums, and we're really trying to democratize finance for everybody, and that means beyond US borders as well. So we're really happy to be in the UK. Been here for around about a year. We've had lots of really good feedback. We can use the app to buy your US stocks, and you have to start somewhere, but we really want to build out this product suite. So. Watch this space, but definitely give the app a go, have a look at it and see what you think.
Yeah. And so it's US stocks at the moment only, but there is ambitions to trade UK European stocks, is that right?
Well, I think, our CEO Vlad Tenev, he's been going on all the media and talking about how localizing these products and everything. So I think goal one is get it looking like what the customers love in the US, and then beyond that, let's look at what our localized customers need. So it's a really exciting time, I have to say. I've been a user for a long time, so nice to get in front of you wearing the Robinhood jumper.
Yeah. Well, do you know what, though? I mean, the way the US markets are, there's no need to trade the UK markets because they're terrible. It's like, that's already, and it's almost like it's momentum as well, isn't it? When you see market doing well, it just sucks more money in, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, forget AIM, forget UK. But there again, we do have cycles. The markets are cyclical, and it will come back, in the UK. And I think, in fact, when everyone is talking about one market, the boat is sort of is heavy in on one side, pretty much. So, there's still plenty of opportunities in the US. But I think there's also the opportunities now, UK, Europe. So, it's almost like I wish I'd gone. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? But I mean, it's almost like going big in the US, a couple of years ago would have been the thing. And now you're thinking, can they still keep going up? They are still keep going up. It's like phenomenal. Some of these, the big stocks, the Mega 7, whatever they're called now. Okay. Go on.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, valuation discount in the UK is just so, it can be so appealing. But I, unfortunately, I think the last time I spoke to you about 18 months, I think we were both saying the same thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you look at the AIM market, it's it's pointless as a market to invest in as a whole, the AIM, all share market, you know, because it's a stock picker's market. There are some great businesses on AIM. Trouble is, you know, it gets tainted because there's a lot of rubbish companies. Well, it's a startup market. And so what you have by the nature of a startup market is a lot of failures. They tend to gain press coverage and the highlights and the headlines. And then people just assume entire AIMs are that. And there's not, because, you know, like I said, my website, I look at the Macrocap League and I only focus on profitable, growing companies. And they're all from AIM, pretty much. And so there are some excellent businesses on AIM, but they do get overlooked and because, you know, you get all these rubbish sort of resource stocks or companies going bankrupt, you know, to grab the headlines. Yeah. So it gets tainted. Yeah. But there are some great businesses on AIM, absolutely. And there's, like I said, some brilliant entrepreneurs in the UK, but it seems at the moment everything's favouring the US. But we're going to be looking at some small caps on our public podcast. So what are we starting off with today, Dan? Is it a quality business or is it a bit of dross?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. We've got three businesses we're going to look at. A couple of turnarounds, actually. I think that's probably the theme of the day. I mean, obviously, before I begin, nothing I say is advice. You know, it's just guidance. No. And just Dan's reflection on the markets more than anything. I think the first one we'll kick off is Mulberry. Before we started,
let's look at the chart. Yeah, let's look at the chart. There's a chart here of Mulberry. And it's not looking good. This is a chart scrolling back here let's go back to 2021. It was 380 a share. In fact, I've seen worse shares than that. It's a quid a share at the moment. So what's happening here, Dan?
Yeah, before we began, you were telling me about your extensive Mulberry handbag collection. Absolutely. It's this heritage brand in the UK. And I think we will probably keep going back to the likes of Burberry in this sentence as well. It's struggled over the past few years, Mulberry. People are trying to think, what space does it exist in? Is it pure luxury? Is it kind of, has it been tainted, who the market is? The reality is, it has really struggled because China has struggled. It had results this week and its Chinese sales more than halved. Its gross margins are really, really impressive, actually, at around 70%, but they've now slipped to around 66. Now, when you've got gross margins at 66 and your retail revenues falling and your pre-tax loss of 16 million, that's telling you what the operating margins are looking like, and that's really not going to be healthy. So story's not great, and they've recently had been fighting off bids from, you know, Mike Ashley has been, and the Frasers Group has been really, really up there. But the point is, it's not reaching the iconic status where its reputation is bringing it forward. You're still buying a handbag for £1,000 on Mulberry. And, you know, I was speaking about it in the office the other day. Apparently the Alexa model is the one you want.
Ironically, in China, you probably get that bag for £5.
I know. Yeah. But again, going back to like the Burberry thing, the Burberry's turnaround recently was about, let's bring it back to basics. Let's get back to what we're known for, you know, the max. Let's forget about all the superfluous stuff. And Mulberry, there's been more comments around that recently. So you go onto the website, there's a frog key ring in leather for £200. Now, I don't know if he needs that. It's just a little green frog for £200.
Frog key ring.
Yeah. No, I don't know who wants that.
You say getting back to basics. You're right there. Now, if I went, you know, and bought that for my wife for Christmas, she would just look at me like I'm stupid. And I'm thinking, why have you bought this? It's like, you know, who's that for? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's this type of thing that I think when companies get a little bit nervous, especially in like the luxury space, they think, we'll just make it and someone will buy it. But you don't go to Mulberry for things like that. You don't go to Burberry for a bag. I mean, somebody must have bought them, but they're not selling out. This return to core product is really part of these turnaround plans. Now, the only thing is, I was watching the shares after they released the RNS. The market just wasn't convinced. They've got this new CEO, Andrea Baldo, who had, you know, just got a good pedigree. But the whole point of getting back to basics, does the world need Mulberry again? I don't know. There's part of this turnaround plan is like really slimming down. Unfortunately, that's going to mean a lot of job cuts, trimming down unperforming stores in China. But once you get back to that, where's the growth coming from? Because it was China. And if it's not China, do we think that the UK customer is going to start spending this? It's they're in a tricky spot. They really are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at it, you got, you know, group revenue down, what, 19% to 56 million there. These are interims, are they? Half year?
First half.
26, yeah. Yeah. And then you've got debt. Looking at the debt there, they've got debt of about 32 million. And you're thinking, that's half the market cap, you know? It's literally, you've got to say, when I invest in a business, because a lot of people focus on share price too much, but when I invest in a business, is this business improving? And I'm thinking, no, it's not. I mean, doesn't seem like there's any signs of it yet improving. You know, it may be a recovery play, but there's no signs of that recovery play happening. And I shouldn't pin their hopes on frogs. I was going to say, the thing is, I don't really know. I know Mulberry's for bags, but I don't really know what it stands out. Burberry, I can sort of see it in my head. It's a very strong brand. Mulberry, I think, you know, they should have accepted the offer from Mike Ashley. What is Mike Ashley doing anyway? Every struggling business you want to buy is like he's just trying to get. It's like he's playing, you know, at Christmas time Monopoly. You just try and buy everything. It's like he's doing that, isn't he? I don't understand what his strategy is. But he's obviously a bit of a genius. But any retailer is in trouble. He's buying, as you can see him on, you know, buying them and thinking, what is he doing? It's like if you get a load of bad businesses together, does it make one good business? I suppose he's using the network and the IP they've got and whatever they have and the brands. I don't know, but it's almost like an evil genius, isn't he? You know?
Well, it's opportunism, isn't it? And the difference is, so the last offer came in at 111 million. Now Burberry's largest shareholder didn't want to take that offer. What it does now is it puts a whole lot of pressure on this turnaround. And if the turnaround doesn't come off, there's the price, you know, there's the ceiling, there's the 111 million that you didn't accept. And you might not get the same next time. And you know what? It's probably not the last time you'll see Mike Ashley. A little bit of opportunism come and say, I wonder if I can snap this up.
Yeah. I don't know what price he offers. But look at that. You see, they are enough. The half year, a loss before tax of 15 million. 15.3 up from 12.3. You've got debt of 32 million. And the thing is, so, you know, maintaining servicing debt when you're making a loss. If you're loss making and the loss is increasing and your debt's getting bigger and your sales are going down, that's not a good combo, you know? So, So, any idea what you offered?
I think it was 111. I think it was.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
And they've recently had a cash raise. I mean, Fraser's stake is around 37%, so that's a strong stake already in the business. If they really do want it, it's probably, I mean, I can't tell the future, but it feels like they're on borrowed time right now, unless something crazy good happens with this turnaround. Often what I see, and you've seen it as well, is that everyone gets very tight and they pull in the marketing budget and just to save money. But as you just said, you don't know Mulberry. They're not out on the billboards. Arguably, they probably need to spend more marketing money to get out there and increase this. But that's not natural, and that doesn't feel natural to do that.
Oh, look, the last bid was 150 pence a share. Take that and run. Is there a quid at the moment?
Yeah.
What are you thinking of? It's a hard turnaround, this is going to be. Cool. Look at this. We believe the appointment of a new CEO, our new debt facility, and a capital raising announced today will put the group on a firm footing to ensure we are well set up for future growth. It doesn't really, just having a debt facility and a new CEO. Growth is very hard to achieve. It's not easy. Just saying it doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know? What's next, Dan?
One that we're going to look, and I think I actually spoke to you this week, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, this is the artist formerly known as Avon Rubber and Avon Protection. Oh, yeah. This is Avon Technologies. This is the company, the provider of respiratory and head protection. They've moved into kind of first responder and militaries. They've kind of had a shotgun approach to products over the past, but it feels like I remember a little while ago, they had a big contract with a U.S. outfit. It was either U.S. Army or Department of Defense.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I think there was maybe a recall on the helmets, and I think that really dented confidence. When you're producing protective gear and your helmets are defective, that's a big thing, right?
It's so dent your confidence, dent your head as well if you don't work.
I know. But, you know, we talked about Mulberry just about to launch their own turnaround plan. Avon Technologies are kind of like, they're well into theirs, and results this week are really, really promising. So we had, profit before tax of $25 million. That's up 81% on last year. I mean, that's fantastic. That beat analyst expectations by around 9-10%. Revenues are up. And the most important thing here for this type of business is that the pipeline of orders is really strong. They've got the US Army, US Department of Defense. Who else have we got? I've written it down here. The UK Ministry of Defence, you've got the New Zealand Navy, the Australian, the German Navy. You've got all sorts. And the good thing is it's diversified as well. And these are fairly consistent. You're looking at $38 million, $34, $42. These are chunky amounts from different places. So this is really good for diversifying the revenue pool. Good thing as well.
Look at that. I mean, every how different is that to Mulberry? Metric here, like I don't know, my book's coming out soon, but I said, a lot of investing is trying to invest in businesses that are improving, and you can see there, because it's a lot easier to do that than try and find a company that's, been down this luck, the share price is down, and looking for recovery play. Because recovery plays, if they do happen, they're very difficult. If they do happen, take a lot longer than you expect. It's a very bumpy road. So you may have the share price may go up on one bit of news, then they release news is not so good the next day. But if you get a company that's constantly improving, you get the share price in uptrend, and it's a lot better to do that by a company. Maybe even if the valuation's, stretched a little bit, it's better to investing in improving company, because look at that, double digit every single metric here, from revenue, obviously that's top line, to even profit before tax, got 88%, like you said, and even they do have net debt, but even that's coming down from 85 to 65. Yeah. So and that's sort of reflecting the chart. Look at that recovery in that. It's come down. Go back in 2020, it was like 45 quid a share. It's still only 13.50, but it did hit. It's 5.60, almost 6 quid a share, just below that. And you can see that it really rallied from October 23. Be interesting to see what they released there, because there was obviously a very good update. Because in a few sessions, it went from 6 quid to 8.80. And it continues to recover, isn't it? Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, so the two specific things that really got me, and I really like to see. So they're going through this transformation. They've clearly talked about efficiencies beforehand. That's Mulberry are in the horrible position of just about to implement those efficiencies. Avon's already doing it, and we're starting to see the result of it. So the scrap rate, a lot of what they do, unfortunately, has to go on the scrap heap. That's down by over half, just because of these efficiencies and a closer attention to what does a customer need and what are we producing. So that's number one.
Exactly. Efficiency, isn't it? That helps your margins. That shows the management is paying attention. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Second thing I really liked was, and I think the market looked past this, that their shares were up 5%. They're actually the highest riser in the all share after this came out. But they said that they were cutting the dividend slightly. They were just trimming it slightly. Because they want to bolster the R&D pipeline and transformation. I really like that, because I like when the company is telling me the return on capital employed is so good that we're not going to pay the dividend. We're going to put it back in because we think it's better spent that way. I really like that for a growth company. No one's buying this for an income play. So I really like when they're doing that. That gives me a lot of confidence.
Yeah. I mean, they did do a trading update on the 13th of October, which was the low here. And they do say, if you look, they say in line with expectations, which is a stronger H2 reflecting good strategic progress. And so so it was a positive update. I wish I'd known about the back then. I wish I'd paid more attention. I mean, you did mention them. I didn't. I tend to focus on companies sub 100 million market cap, but I don't know what the word on there. They're in at the moment, they're 400 million market cap. So there must have been sub 100 down there.
But this was the thing back then, because they didn't have a diversified revenue stream. It was maybe diversified to a certain extent, but certainly there was the bulk of the order coming from the US. And then whenever that didn't go well, that, you could see on the chart exactly where that hit as well.
Look at that. You often have these recovery players. Some companies, you know, may not recover, they may go bust. But I mean, you can see here, you know, from these gap downs from December 2020, gap down there, rallied a bit, technical bounce, then rolled over again, gap down again in 2021, gap down again at the end of 2021, gap down again in 2022. And then all of a sudden you hit the, you're bumping on the bottom here, so it's sort of grinded lower. And then recovery comes on. That's how long, from the first almost, you know, bit, that's why recovery plays are very hard, because first of all, you have a bit of a warning, gaps down, and then you think it starts to rally, think, okay, back on track, so, and then almost down again. And so this is now, think, when is this going to recover? This is recoveries can take years, you know, and it has here, and, like I said, and now they're starting to recover. But so you often get people jumping in. I always say never try and do, I've done it before many times, try to catch a falling knife and be injured, because it's not worth it. You're better off waiting for an improvement, missing the first, you know, 20-30% rise, because it's when trying to guess the bottom, but then trying to get into the uptrend. In fact, here, above 200-day moving average, which is the red line, and that's when it's sort of an across over here. Yeah, so and it's starting to recover nicely now. But they said that's how long a recovery can take, several years. So, and my one of my flaws, my one of my weaknesses is always jumping in too early to any recovery play and not having patience. Oh, it's on! And then realize they release another statement saying, it's not as good as we thought. And then, oh, down again. So, yeah. Okay, what's next, Dan?
So yes, number three, people might remember this is from the crypto craze first time around. This is Argo blockchain. This is a crypto miner. And you know, the glory days were kind of 2021 for Argo. That was an absolute rocket up.
Well, can I say what I did here, right? I held these, I told you this before. I held these right back here. I remember actually trying to buy Bitcoin when Bitcoin was like $300. And I couldn't buy it. I didn't know how to do it because it wasn't the platforms you could have now. Like, you know, I don't know. Well, Coinbase is the most famous one, I suppose, for crypto. Mm. But there wasn't any of that. You know, you get a paper wallet and there's a string of letters and keys. And I thought, what the heck is all this about? And I just couldn't figure it out. I wish I had figured it out, but I just gave up. But next time I bought Bitcoin, it was about $5,000. But I also bought Argo. And I said, right, Bitcoin is rallying. Argo is a miner. They're going to rally too. I didn't go anywhere for ages. In the end, you know, I sold around about 5 pence. It was about 5 pence. Look at the chart there. It went from 5 pence up to it peaked out at £3.40. It's like a 3,000% gain. And I sold literally about 3 months before that. I was so impatient. It's not going anywhere. I didn't understand. Why wouldn't it rally? Bitcoin is rallying, but they're not. But they're mining Bitcoin. I don't understand. And people say, it's the difficulty of mining. But it wasn't. It just took a lot longer to catch on. It just took off. But since then, they've loaded up with debt. They always thought Bitcoin was going to be high, and it sort of Bitcoin then came down. They got debt then. Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin came down, and they've come into all kinds of financial troubles. And now, are they selling? I think they're selling all. They're going to quit mining, I think, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting, and you're right. I mean, it goes back to crypto. I mean, I think the jury's still out on what it is and what it's used for. Whatever your beliefs, it just hasn't mirrored that Bitcoin price. And as you say, once you start to explore that, you find yourself going, well, I don't really know what's happening here. The reality is Argo is the miner, and mining margins have really come down this year. And something I really wanted to point out that really struck me, kind of the reason I wanted to talk about it today, is so mining margins from, you know, they released the results this week, they fell 8% in Q3, and that was 58% last year. Mm. So I was asking myself, how do you get margins that are falling to that extent? And it's these power credits that these miners can use. And this is essentially, there's two ways that they can make money with the main grid. So the grid operators can, you know, pay them if they promise to reduce their power usage, because they're so power intensive, or the power that they've already, you know, pre-negotiated to buy, they can then sell that back into the grid, maybe when the energy prices are high. It should be said that this is not their main business line. You know, they're a miner. This all feels like a fringe play, albeit if you're making 58% margin, that's a fantastic play, but it just shows how volatile that is and how unpredictable it is. if you're still on the downward curve, even when you get these massive plays, it starts to make the primary function look a bit shaky. So I'm not surprised if, you know, you've got the crypto bulls who are focusing directly on the coins themselves. And then you've got the other side of it where they're saying, I'm actually not that sure because that company is dabbling in different business areas, especially as you said, they seem to be pivoting as well, using the AI label as well. And the worry is that they then start to hopscotch between what's popular at the moment.
Well, I mean, the Galaxy, I think, who loaned the money, which is another company, loaned the money, runs their Helios operational, which they've got, you know, thousands of computers they're mining. But now Galaxy is pulling out. In fact, I'll show you the wording of this recent thing. But what even though they paid the debt back from Galaxy, they still got a bond there of $38 million. Now, their market cap, there's Bitcoin, by the way, 97,000 Bitcoins out. But they've got a market cap of, again, dangerous combination when you're loss-making and you literally have a market capitalization of $52 million and you've got debt of, what, $35 million or $30 million in pounds. So it's three quarters of almost the market cap, and they're loss making. So you realize, revenue from digital, odd, but cash flow, let's go down here. I think they lost for 20 million or something ridiculous in the last, what do they say here? Net loss of 9.9 for 3 months and 26 million for, so net loss of, no, so 39.2 million for 9 months, and you've got debt of like 30 odd million, and your market cap is 50. And then what I like to listen this announcement here. This point, these are two different areas they're in, different sites. I don't know how to say that. Baie-Comeau and Helios. Now they own, I think, Baie-Comeau, but they don't own Helios. Mm-hmm. And so they started off by saying, "Look at this, high performance computing. They've entered into a non-binding letter of intent with BE Global, a specialist HPC, which is high-performance computing solutions, to explore significant expansion at the company's owned Baie-Comeau facility. This is for looking at computer applications, data processing, AI, other computationally intensive tasks." Now, AI is, of course, is massive, but compared to normal data centers, AI data centers take 10 times the energy. So I don't know how they're going to afford that energy anyway. But they start this off with a very positive thing. Oh, they're switching to AI. AI is the way forward. It's probably bigger than crypto at the moment, apart from Bitcoin. But they scroll down. Helios, by the way, a Galaxy who own this, they're not going to renew the company's current hosting agreement at Helios. So they've been informed by Galaxy they're not going to beyond this year. So Galaxy has also announced they're going to do HPC. So the company is considering its options for its mining fleet, which is 23,000 of these computers. So essentially, they're going to stop crypto mining at their own facility. Galaxy is going to stop doing it and they just switch into this high, and they've got spare 23,000 computers. So what is your business now? What are you doing? You've got a lot of debt to pay. You better sell those computers very quickly. I don't know how, when they become obsolete, because of course technology, you know, shoots by, and you get faster computers every year, pretty much. I mean, that's your asset there. But you've got a lot of debt to pay off, and you haven't got, you're not mining, you're not doing anything anymore. You've just got a letter of intent. I don't know how you're going to get money from that. So
yeah, listen, crypto was out of favor for a long time. It's difficult to, I mean, we all have short memories when it started. Did you just say it just hit, you know, 97,000? We have short memories, and there was a bit of a crypto winter for a long time there. But it's those types of times that you have to take stock and say, as a company, how do we avoid this happening again? Signing a letter of intent and exploring these things when you're heavily indebted feels a little bit too late. It feels like the horse is bolted there.
Well, the thing is with Bitcoin is that the higher the price goes, the more difficult it becomes to mine. And so your costs go up, your energy costs go up massively. And so a lot of crypto miners now are not profitable. They can't do it. Mm. And so it's okay if you've, probably the best thing they could have done is just, you know, when they were mining it down here and it was easy, just hold on to it, you know, and rather than just sell it or whatever you need to do. But you probably need to pay the energy costs though. So one thing I think the winner from this, whether it's crypto mining or AI data centers, is energy. Thinking, where is that all that energy going to come from? You know, and who's going to benefit from these? I mean, the owners of data centers will benefit, of course. But of course, you've got NVIDIA, pretty much, who sells most of the chips to these AI data centers, but they're already risen. You're thinking, where's the next play then? You know, it's energy based somewhere, because it is all about energy. It's, you know, it's not going to get any less intense to mine these, to either crypto mining or AI data centers, 10 times the power they need compared to normal data centers, which is nuts.
Well, I mean, it begs the question that, you know, we need to have these conversations around grid infrastructure. I mean, there's a lot of smart energy funds out there exploring, is the grid still fit for purpose? I mean, that's a huge question to ask. But when you're talking about, everyone's talking about the AI as the future. If the technology was stunted because we couldn't afford to give it what it needs, that feels like a massive shame. And maybe the questions are about, you know, actual national infrastructure here, which is a much bigger question than, you know, I can take part in.
Yeah. But I do think the way forward, I know there's a lot of people who are especially on AIM, invested in oil and gas stocks, and they're really annoyed because, you know, investment has come out of it, and they're saying it's government's fault and all this stuff. But you've got to follow the money. And to a certain extent, if you're going to power these things, then I think you're better off powering them with renewables rather than fossil fuels, you know? So, because at least you can set these kind of data centers up somewhere, I don't know, Africa or wherever it's windy, and you could constantly, you know, get power from them, you know, and it's renewable. It's unlimited, rather than trying to drill for stuff or, you know, get stuff out of the ground for it. It just seems like this is a lot more suited to renewable energy than fossil fuels and digging out of the ground or whatever. Marvelous stuff. Thanks for that, Dan. I'll catch up in a few weeks' time. Dan, this lead analyst at Robinhood UK. Check it out. It's now, here we are. This is the website there. Trade US stocks without commission or FX fees. Sign up right there. Marvelous stuff. Thanks, Dan. Speak soon, fella.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Oh my gosh.
Put your hands together for new Dr. Pepper Blackberry and Dr. Pepper Blackberry Zero Sugar.
There she is! Woo-hoo! Yeah! It's bold Dr. Pepper!
With sweet blackberry flavor!
Dr. Pepper Blackberry, I'm obsessed with your succulent taste. Please marry me!
No! Marry me! Marry me or I'm gonna freak out!
Try new Dr. Pepper Blackberry.
It's a pepper thing!
Columbus, mark your calendars. Concert for a Cause, presented by the Columbus Auto Dealers, is coming to Kemba Live on Saturday, August 9th. Catch multi-platinum country star Tyler Hubbard and powerhouse trio Runaway June, live for one powerful night of music. All proceeds benefit the Butterfly Guild at Nationwide Children's Hospital, the Ryan and Christina Day Fund, and the Starhouse Foundation. Get your tickets now at cbusconcertforacause.com. One night, two incredible acts, three amazing causes. Don't miss out.